What's your emergency?
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the PIA Podcast, a place to discuss all public information related topics for police, fire, EMS, and local and federal government organizations.
It was a good learning experience for a lot of us that social media is not real life.
But we have to remember the media are very rarely a target audience. They're simply that conduit.
Our words have impacts on individuals, and it may not be positive. So just being thoughtful and mindful of the words that we speak.
I think what's so interesting about this position too, and this job and this profession, is that every one of us is looking for purpose. And when we find it here, that's it.
To know is that a crisis for one is not necessarily a crisis for another.
Wow, here we are in 2024. This is the fourth season of the PIO Podcast. Thank you to all our previous guests over the prior three seasons. You have truly made the PIO Podcast a great success. For this year, I've already lined up some great guests. So sit back and enjoy today's guest.
Good morning. Today in the PIO Podcast, we have Public Information Officer Cara Cruz. She's from the City of Pittsburgh's Department of Public Safety. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Robert.
So, Cara, thank you. I appreciate you being on. It's been something I've been trying to get you on for a while, and you're just one of those people in the background that always doing stuff, and I just haven't gotten around to you yet. So thank you for, you know, saying you would do it, and I'm honored to have you on. So let's talk about your career, because you started out in the news media, correct?
Correct.
So where did you start?
So I started in Canada. I'm Canadian. I started in Vancouver, BC, first of all. Went to journalism school out there and started with the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation right out of the gates. I had an internship and they kept me on. That was 100 years ago, but truly it was like 1999 even. So I did that with them in Vancouver, Toronto, and then finally at their bureau in Washington, D.C. Back in 2016 through 2018 before moving to Pittsburgh and getting into this business.
So were you in the news media here in the U.S. or did you come to work for the police department specifically?
So it was kind of a weird transition. I came to the U.S. Via marriage, and but when I got the job in D.C., it was still with my old my old network. So, and then when my then husband got a job here in Pittsburgh, I was like, you know what? I don't think I'm going to do this news thing anymore. I've done it for 20 years. Let's see what this is all about. And I could not have had a better transition to get into the communications game, because it's something different every single day. You're learning something all the time. Have these amazing conversations with, first responders, about their work and about, how the message should be relayed to people. It's so dynamic all the time.
I agree with you. It is a really great, this job is, you can't replace it with anything. It really can't. Let's talk about some statistics. Number sworn versus civilian population, civilian personnel, and then what's the population of Pittsburgh?
So I really don't know the civilian population or the civilian sworn or the civilian staff actually numbers, but for police, there's about 740 police at the moment. We've had a lot of resignations since 2020, a lot this year. When I started, there were over 1,000 police. So that was in 2019. So 2020 certainly took a toll, as it did in departments all around the country. And right now we're in the phase of trying to build back up. But this is a small city. I think a lot of people think it's a lot larger than it is. I think it's the Pittsburgh and surrounding areas, it's 300 plus thousand. But it's, you know, we have some comparables in terms of size, like Columbus, places like that. So.
Right. When I was doing my research and, you know, you look at Pittsburgh itself, 300,000 people, I think staff for 1,000, but obviously nobody has full staff ever. But then you're also in the 26 media markets. So there's a lot of attention on what you do in Pittsburgh, just in general, because it's Pittsburgh. You have the Steelers there. It's just a lot of attention to that town.
I myself was surprised by that, to be honest. Moving here, living in, you know, Vancouver and Toronto and DC, it felt like a small town to me. But there's a lot of scrutiny and a lot of interest in what happens here, public safety wise. We've had a lot of unfortunate, mass shootings that, you know, obviously made national and international headlines. And then once you have that, that focus, it never really leaves the area. You know, people are very much on guard.
And you're talking about the synagogue shooting, correct?
Synagogue shooting. We also had the one at Easter morning, an Airbnb with young people. So, those were two really high profile ones. And then we also had back in August of last year, it wasn't a mass shooting, but it was certainly an incident with record numbers of gunfire rounds fired, even shocking ShotSpotter.
So, going back to 2020, when you were there, was it COVID that caused the resignations of the officers?
No, I think it was a confluence of things. We had a lot of the protests. We had protests pretty much definitely every week, certainly at least three times a week. But in the beginning, they were, there were a couple of police cars burned. There was there was two nights that can be described as riots. And one, having been in different cities, I've seen that before. They had never seen that here. They really hadn't. And they were shocked by it. Police were shocked by it. This is kind of a cradle to grave city. And people are, I kind of feel like it's a modernizing city, but it has a very 70s, 80s feel to it. And I think a lot of police officers didn't want to work in that environment where they felt hated. And so it took a long, because they weren't hated before, unlike other cities where the tide had sort of turned, with police, people were scrutinizing them a lot more. That was happening here because, certainly this department had been under a consent decree at one time. But the general out in the public sentiment was not, they never felt that way until 2020. So there was some of that.
Obviously, that's amazing that some incident that is nowhere near your community and that it has that much of an impact on it. And then you end up losing hundreds of officers in a relatively short period of time, unplanned.
Right. Well, the other thing is, that's why I said that certainly wasn't the only reason, but this is actually an older department. I feel so lucky to work with people who are my age. I'm in my 50s and, they've been working there since they were teenagers and, they're retiring, 50, 52, 54, and they've been working there for more than 30 years. So it's an older department for sure.
So have you guys developed your strategy for hiring?
This is my challenge right now. We have our new chief, Chief Larry Scarrato. That is his, primary focus. And we've never really done recruitment before. We used to leave it to, our, human resources department at the City of Pittsburgh. He did a fabulous job, but they never really had to work at it. They used to fill, I hear stories of they used to fill the convention center with people just wanting to write the test. We couldn't fill my living room right now. So it is tough.
I know it's scary. When I started in this career close to 30 years ago, you would go for an interview or you would go for that initial meeting with the whatever municipality it was, and there'd be 5,000, 6,000 people there for one position. and then you'd create a list and you'd hope to get on in a couple of years. Now you couldn't get 50 people to show up to, but City of Chicago has a hard time finding people. They're losing people just left and right as it is. And a lot of it is because of the way the environment has portrayed police officers.
Yeah, a lot of it is. And, you know, and also, like, I think they're all just taking a little bit of a different look at their lifestyle. They've worked so hard for so long and done so many overtime hours. Now it's just time to be with their families. And, you know, as you know, a lot of police officers don't actually live long after they retire. It's a terrible statistic.
Tough. And, you know, you hope the younger guys now are taking better care of themselves, they're eating better, they're exercising, they're getting mental health helps for mental health issues and PTSD. And I think departments are really much better at it than they were when I started. I know we instituted a lot of programs to help officers with that, but years ago, you know, they didn't talk about that stuff.
No, definitely not. And there's a huge group that who still don't. But you know, the fact is that they are, you know, the resources are there. But with, you know, dwindling numbers of officers, the overtime, it, you know, it takes a toll no matter what, no matter what, you know, resources you have. So that's, it's a tough moment right now.
Carl, what's the staffing for your office?
There are two of us. There's myself and another PIO. And we try to divide and conquer because we have police, fire, EMS, animal care and control, emergency management, a bunch of different, bureaus within the Department of Public Safety. But of course, the lion's share of what we do is police, but we still can't give the others short shrift. So it's tough with just two people, to be perfectly honest. And we have a social media specialist as well, but she's not on call. So she's more Monday to Friday. And she likes to refer to herself as the good news person, whereas I tend to be the bad news bear. But, you know, as a former journalist, my goal every day is to find those positive stories and, you know, push them out to the right people. It doesn't always mean a press conference or, you know, a press release. I like putting the right stories in the right hands. And I feel like that gives an audience a better idea of what police actually do and what first responders do.
So you just brought this up, putting it in front of the right audience. How does it feel to be on the other end of the microphone?
I'm actually very, very shy. So I don't love being on camera. You know, I've done it I love to write. That was, you know, why I got into journalism in the first place. But unfortunately, I chose broadcast, which you can't really hide from. So, it's honestly, it's such a great, I don't know. It's just, it feels like a natural extension, for me. And it's more comfortable for me than being in the news. That's for sure. So
here's a good opportunity for our listeners, especially our PIOs, to hear from somebody that was in the news media that now on the other end. Talk about providing the right information to the media. What do they need to make sure that they're doing all the time?
I'm going to speak pretty highly, actually, of the media here. Everything I love about them is everything that makes my job hard, in the sense that, like, they don't just report what they, you know, hear on the scanner, or, you know, they want to verify, but, you know, all the information, which is great, but they also are on 24/7 listening to it all the time. And, you know, there's only two of us. So, you know, we are like chasing down information for them at all times. And of course their deadlines are just, you know, hourly. We can get that information, but it's pretty basic in the beginning, and that's not, you know, that's not what they want. So, you know, just having patience is the biggest thing. Like, I understand their deadlines, having worked in that business, but it's the mind twist for me is, I don't work for them, and I don't work with, I don't, those aren't, their deadlines are not my deadlines.
Right.
So I have employers, and I have people who I'm beholden to get the information right. So it's not just that I need to get it right from them. I need to get it right, you know, for what our first responders did at a specific scene. And that takes time sometimes, you know?
So, all right, let me ask you this. So an incident occurs out on the street, it's not something that the PIO is going to necessarily get called out on. Does the on-scene supervisor, do they have the ability to talk to the media there?
Yes, they do.
Are they allowed to?
So previously, like when I first started, the previous mayoral administration did not like that. They wanted everything to be centralized through the PIO, which is fine. It was a technique, but I'm a really, really strong advocate for training up our first responders to be able to be comfortable speaking with the media, because what they say goes so much further than when it comes from me. Because, you know, there's a person in a uniform who was at the scene and knows what they can and can't say. You know, you and I know that we had to go through a lot of self-editing and, where the story could go. So you're doing a lot of, like I said, editing. Whereas they're in more of a, they're in a better position. You know, they know they spend time in court. So they can kind of see that trajectory and know that, what they can and can't say. But, we're still extremely valuable in terms of what, directing them and letting them know what's out there in the zeitgeist and I always call them pointing out the landmines. So, my job is to point out the landmines so that you don't step on them. And, after that, you're good to go. So I love that I'm like creating this stable of all these people who are now very willing to speak to the media. So yes, they do have that ability. This chief, our new chief, is absolutely huge on that. He wants to empower all of them to speak with the media, but there's a little bit of undoing, retraining their brains to do it because they were never allowed to before.
Completely understandable. And the fact that you're training them to speak to the media, and then that certainly lightens the load for you to try and get information on something that you're not going to get a call on until you make that call. So I think that's great. And not only that, but it makes it so much easier for that, the media, the stringer media, those guys that are just contract and they run out and they take video and they sell to all the news stations or whatever, makes it so much easier for them to get their soundbite. Everybody's happy.
Yeah, absolutely. But the one thing that I do have to, always remind them is that if it is, let's say it's a homicide, if one media person grabs them and said, and I'm not at the scene and they say, I need to talk to you. And then that, supervisor goes home and they've only spoken to one person, then you have 15 others who are at the other end of the block who got completely ignored. And then that comes back to me and says, I heard that so-and-so, why are you giving exclusive interview? That type of thing. So we've talked a lot about saying, work with the media. They'll work with you and say, ask them, is everyone here? Do you think everyone's here? And they'll often say, no, Bob's down at the next block. Get Bob over here then, because we're only doing this once.
Yep. So I agree with that. Great way to do it. I mean, in the two markets that I've worked in, it's always been the way it's done. I've had guys all over the place and I'm like, you got to be here. It's not going to happen except to here. So yeah, that's awesome. So do you get a deja vu? Did you get a deja vu the very first time you were interviewed?
Not really. I mean, I spent probably half my career on the air and then in the other half behind the scenes producing, which was more of my comfort zone. So I don't know. Not really. I don't even really think about my news, like my on-air news presence anymore. It's always journalistically as how I look, my skill set is that's the one I want to use the most in this job, telling those stories.
So you had mentioned social media before. What platforms does your department currently use?
We use Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Instagram seems Facebook and Instagram are our best, audiences, of course. Twitter is, a bit of a tire fire sometimes, as we all know. So,
have you explored TikTok for recruitment?
We haven't. I know that there's two minds of it. I think this current chief really wants that. And you know, it just takes the right personalities to be able to do that. And we have some, and hopefully they'd be willing. But do you see a lot of people doing that?
I'm seeing more and more agencies doing it. Dallas PD does a phenomenal job. If you ever want to get a chance to see what they do, they have a girl that runs that one, and she's really good at it. And they've really embraced it as a way to pull people in to show the video, and from a more youthful perspective, to really connect with that part of the community that they need to connect with.
Nice. Is she an officer or a PIO?
She's an officer.
That's the other thing.
It's a different perspective.
I mean, that's the other thing that I find really interesting. The departments whose PIOs are officers and those who are civilians.
Well, there's a mix in Dallas. So they have civilian PIOs, but then they have, I can't remember her name now, but then she's an officer. She runs her TikTok. I think there's a couple others that run their other platforms. So it's more of those officers that would be out in the field or in a specialized unit that are running the social media. And they do have another civilian for social media there as well. So it's a big department.
I mean, we're going to try just about everything right now because, you know, it is a great job and this is a great city, you know, to do it. To be a police officer here or a medic or a firefighter, you know, you have your three major league sports teams. You've got a beautiful city they can get around in, you know, very, very quickly. And it's inexpensive. It's just, and you don't even, none of them even have to live in the city that anymore. That's the other thing. So they can live as far out as they want and still, you know, get, you know, the benefits of living in, you know, in a really.
Not only that, but you're fairly centrally located. You can get to the coast pretty easily. You can get to the Midwest pretty easily. You can head south or go to Canada if you want.
Yeah, flying, yes. But flying out of this city has never been, there's not a lot of direct flights. So that's where it gets a bit sticky sometimes. But, you know, most people, once they're here, they get sucked into the Pittsburgh vortex and they don't want to leave. That's what happened to me.
I love it. All right, so have you taken any kind of specialized training for public information?
No, and that's, you know, it's funny because I'm just now, since 2020, like starting to come up for air, because I started as an assistant PIO and then a deputy PIO and then now I'm the PIO because there's been movement all along, you know, and moving up the chain. So I never really had the opportunity to even take advantage of some of the training out there. I've already, you know, signed up for one, but I hear the FBI LEADA program is amazing. You know, never been able to do that. And so I think it's always a great opportunity when you can be reminded of why you do what you do. Like half of those kinds of trainings to me are like, oh yes, just like a reset. And
absolutely. And sometimes it just gives you a different perspective of how to do things. FBI LEADA, the medium public relations, and then the master PIO course that they have. And I think they're working on a third one right now, development. Then you have John Guilfoyle out of Boston that does remote training and online training. And then, of course, there's the NIOA conference, which if you're not a member, I suggest you become one.
Okay.
Really, their training conference, I will say this, it's usually in end of August, early September. It's like right before Labor Day weekend. And I have to say, it's one of the best networking and training opportunities that are out there because any incident that's happened in the country prior to the conference within maybe the last 3 months prior to it, they probably are going to have a PIO that's going to come and talk about that incident as well. Yeah. So you get a lot of very real world experience and what they've done to deal with that issue or incident, whatever it was. So it's really a great organization to be part of. And you get to go to Nashville for the conference.
Sign me up.
All right. So it's been a few years. You've been in the position now for a few years. Have you implemented any changes?
There's some of them that have stuck and some of them that have not and I miss. One when I started here, we didn't even have a media blotter, like any sort of like centralized place other than social media to put our information. And so we'd be answering the same questions over and over and over again via email. So that, you know, that's been a godsend because, you know, especially when the big incidents happen, I can just direct people, you know, while we're in it, you know, just please watch these platforms, you know, so that we're not having to answer a million emails. Go ahead.
So about the media blotter, the question I had is that something your supervisors put together or is that you guys do?
Yeah, that's us.
Okay. When I was in Colorado Springs, one of the things that we had is our supervisors, when they had an incident, they were responsible for putting together our e-tax, and basically what that was is the blotter end of it. It gave a pass on information for supervisors. It was a two-sided platform. You had the internal view, and then you had the external. So the external was location, date, and time, and a brief narrative of what happened and if anybody was arrested. The inside one had a lot more detail, you know, that at least the PIO then can dig into it deeper. But the media side of it was up within some incidents, 30 minutes, others times a couple hours, but it was certainly less of a pain for us to have to generate that information later.
Well, for us, we do. So I'm on call every second week and it's Monday. We sort of mirror the our duty commanders, 8 a.m. Monday till 8 a.m. Monday. So a lot of the things I'm answering in the middle of the night, I'm just basically calling around to all the supervisors if I'm not at the scene itself. Because I can't wait until the next morning, you know, for them to put, you know, supervisors to put together that list. It's 8 hours later and, you know, the media is not interested, or they're really interested. They're driving me crazy. So, it's the on-call shift is a really tough thing, which is that's in the middle of trying to, not get rid of the on-call, but not be as available and as responsive because we've become, as I like to call them, their personal crime concierges. Like it's gotten a little out of control.
Yeah. When I was in Colorado Springs, the PIO that was there prior would go out to every scene. And it got to the point where when the new supervisor, the new lieutenant came into the unit, he's like, "Nah, we're not doing that." And then I got out there and then there was another new lieutenant and she said, "The only thing we're going out on are homicides and that's it. Or OISs." And we didn't even go out on every homicide. It had to be fairly notable.
Right. Like if a person's been transported and they, you know, die in the hospital, like I tend not to go anymore, but we had, you know, previous administration who's sort of, our sort of marching orders were if the media is there, you're there. Well, that was tough because there's two of us and many.
Right. Well, you could, depending on how busy it was. I mean, you could be running one section of the city to another.
All night long. And the thing is,
it's exhausting.
Yeah, it's exhausting. So we're trying to really, and we're making some headway there, but it is, you know, retraining the media on that too. You know, it's just,
well, and you're in a bigger market. So the nice thing is you have some more experienced reporters. The market I was in previously, they were like 88. So you have a lot of new reporters that don't know how to do things to begin with. And they've been told, "I got to get a story or you're going to go home." You know what I mean? That shoot me five stories. And if they don't have one, you know, they're looking at it out.
And I do feel for them sometimes, but at the same time, it's, I could never do that job anymore. I don't think because of the way their deadlines and the demands on them. We become the de facto PIOs for a whole bunch of things, you know, even if it's not us. And that's what we're trying to get away from a little bit, as well, because, you know, we're too available.
Right. So what projects is the office currently working on?
Definitely working on a big recruitment video and advertising. So, you know, basically producing that whole thing and working with some, you know, professional agencies to get that done. And I, you know, mostly for me, I like to pitch a lot of feature stories to reporters, and that's a delicate balance because, as you know, reporters, you know, don't like to be fed things, so it has to be good. And I like to give them access that is meaningful, and not, you know, something that it just seems self-serving, because they can.
You know, I'm a big fan of pitches. You have to pitch stories, and we have a lot, so why not?
It's hard to, like, every once in a while I'll stop and think this. The other day, I just said one thing to a reporter, and then she went, "What?" And I said, "Oh yeah, that is big, isn't it?" So we forget what we have right in front of us. Sometimes, you know, like right now, right before Christmas, I pitched a story about our technical negotiations team that goes out to, you know, SWAT and all, you know, different mental health calls. Oops, what happened there? Oh, goodness.
Did I lose you?
Something keeps popping up, unfortunately. I'm so sorry. Yes, we have, I pitched a story in December about the tactical negotiations team to one reporter. And because of their deadlines, she said, "Well, I'm going to have to do it tonight." And I said, "No, this is more of an access piece. I'm like, I want you to, you know, spend time with a few of them, and see what they go through, and go out to some of these scenes." And it's ended up, now they're saving it for their sweeps because it's going to be like a 3-part series.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, you got to kind of get them to understand that. And if they go back to their editor and say, "Hey, this is what I got," and the editor's going to say, "Yeah, go with it."
Yeah, that's exactly what happened, because she was supposed to turn it around that night. And now it's like it still hasn't even run because they're still gathering. She came so excited last week. She said, you know, that, you know, there was a man who was up on the very top of the superstructure of one of the bridges. And I was at this scene he was up there 90 minutes in the blazing sun. And our negotiators talked to him all that time. And first of all, I'm so grateful that he was able even to make it down from there. I don't even know how that was possible, because we couldn't get anything up there to get him. It was too far up. But he reunited on camera with one of the negotiators. So it's going to be like my goal as a PIO is to show, you know, the other side of police, and that they don't get to see. And it's not because we're keeping it from them. It's just what happens on a daily basis. And, you know, we don't advertise it. So.
Right, right. There was a story that was in the news locally here. One of the municipalities, fairly large in the metro Chicago area, they had officers that responded to a vehicle that had driven into a pond. A family was in the car. They were there within a minute or two. The people could not get out. The car was starting to sink. The officers were able to break a window, were able to finally get the family out. And the officers didn't want to talk about it initially, and somehow their PIO got them to talk. And the one female officer says, "Well, this is just what we do. It's our job." And, you know, the reporter said, "Well, don't you feel like you're a hero?" And she goes, "No, that's what we do. It's our job to help." And that is, you can't pay enough advertisement for that. That will come back to you 100 times.
Yeah, and that's exactly it. I mean, that's always the struggle, because I, on our morning calls, I'll always say, "And I don't want to hear, it's just my job. It's what we do." But yeah. I mean, but it is what they do. And they don't, you know, some of them don't want any accolades. And some do. I mean, some at the end of the day, they're like kind of chuffed when the, you know, the media pays attention to them, and it feels pretty good, because it's recognition that they did of a job well done, you know?
Right. Absolutely. So is there a question I should have asked? And if so, how would you have answered it?
I think for me, one of the things I feel so grateful to have this job. It's as hard as it is. I mean, on those days, I always have the worst of the days. I always have to remember, wow, the front row seat to the greatest show on earth. And by that, I don't mean that life is always, and it's always exciting and fun, because it's obviously tragic. But I see so many moments of humanity in that. And that I get to see it from both sides, from a first responder's, perspective, and from a victim's and victim's families. It's a part of life people do not get to see, and I get to see it every day. So
great. All right, let's go to some rapid fire questions. Texting or talking?
Oh, talking.
Chocolate or vanilla?
Chocolate.
Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Adult drink of choice?
Oh, wine. I'm equal opportunity lover of all wine.
What would be your superpower if you could have one?
Ooh. I think it would be to read minds.
Ask permission or beg for forgiveness?
Beg for forgiveness.
PIO's way.
Yep.
Place you most want to travel to?
Sweden.
First celebrity crush?
Probably like Ralph Macchio. The Karate Kid. I don't know, probably.
Guilty pleasure food?
Guilty pleasure food?
Yes.
Nachos.
Who would you choose if you could have coffee with any historical figure, living or dead? Who would you like to talk to?
I think Bono.
Okay, good.
I don't know why.
Why not? All right, final thoughts. What key points would you like our listeners to take away from today?
I think one of the things I want people to know about this job is that, PIOs are not apologists for police or any other first responders who break the law or, act, improperly. We are here to, facilitate questions and inform the public about things that may be happening in their communities. But, we also, we can't be all things to all people. We try so hard to give everyone what they need, be it the media, be it the public, and also be there for the people who we work for and with, which are the first responders. So we try to be, it's hard to be all things to all people, but that is what people want from us. So just have patience.
Excellent. Anything else you'd like to add?
No, this is really fun. So thank you.
Kara, how can people best reach out to you if they want to connect, follow up, or maybe interview for a job?
So we have an easy PIO@pittsburghpa.gov email address. And I'd like to tell people that is, for the public, that is for the media, that is, whoever wants to ask a question, we are a 24/7 operation. So, yeah.
Excellent. Kara, thank you very much. Kara, thank you for being on the show. I appreciate it. And, again, a pleasure to have you on. And thank you.
It was a pleasure to meet you as well. And thank you for all those great resource tips. I'm going to look into all of them.
You know what? I'll send an email with some other things for you as well. And that's Kara Cruz, Public Information Officer for Pittsburgh Department of Public Safety. That's all for this week. We hope you enjoyed this episode.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast to get notified of the latest episode. If you are listening on a platform that allows reviews, please give us a review. We appreciate any review, good or bad. It helps us improve on each episode. Until next time, be safe.